This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
It sounds like Earth is heating up slowly, like 0.1.4 degrees per decade. But look at the record-smashing heat waves, drought, and floods in the summer of 2022, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. Our little measuring system doesn't really cut it. Maybe we should make every tenth of a degree into a full degree, like it matters. But scientists have a better way. It is called Earth Energy Imbalance. Here to explain is one of the world's top climate scientists, Dr. Kevin Trenberth. He is a distinguished scholar at NCAR, the U.S. National Center for Atmospheric Research, and an IPCC report leader. We will be working from Trenberth's new book, The Changing Flow of Energy Through the Climate System. From Auckland, New Zealand, Kevin Trenberth, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Yes, hello, Alex. How are you? I should also mention that down here in Auckland, I'm affiliated with the University of Auckland.
Very good. Why that title for your book? What does it say?
Well, if you think about global climate change, the real problem is the human changes in the composition of the atmosphere. In particular, the buildup of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide is built up by over 48% since pre-industrial times, since basically about the, say, the 1880s. And so the composition of the atmosphere is changing. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. There are some other important changes in other greenhouse gases, in particular methane and nitrous oxide, that are a result of all other human activities. The carbon dioxide results from burning of fossil fuels primarily. And a consequence is a changing in the heating of the system. And so we often refer to global warming, but warming is a synonym for heating, in fact. And it's much better thought of as global heating. And part of that heating goes into raising temperature, which is the other part that is a definition that's used for warming. It's ambiguous in that regard. But a lot of the heat doesn't just go into raising temperature. It goes into evaporating moisture because over the oceans, you know, 70% of the Earth is water. And so if there's extra heat available, the first thing that happens where it's wet, over land or over the oceans is that water evaporates and puts more moisture into the atmosphere, which gets caught up in all of the weather systems. And as a result, the weather systems are more vigorous. It rains harder when it rains. This has consequences for floods. And in places where it's not raining, things dry out more quickly. And so the droughts are more intense and we get heat waves and wildfires. And so these extremes that have come to the fore this year in particular and have been widely publicized in the media in ways that have not occurred previously are very much related to the increase in global heating. And so this relates then directly to the flow of energy through the climate system. In my book, I sort of set the stage for understanding more completely just what is going on and why.
You do indeed, and I love the book. I kept it by my bedside all summer and kept reading parts here and parts there. Let's dive into the real measure of climate change. Chapter 2 is called Earth's Energy Imbalance and Climate Change. You join other scientists to say energy imbalance is the key, but the idea has not caught on with the media or the public. What is this Earth energy imbalance?
So as I mentioned before, we have an increased blanket of greenhouse gases, the changing composition of the atmosphere. And so this interferes with the natural flow of energy through the climate system. So we always have the sun beating down on the planet, and it then gets involved in various interesting transforms, which is part of what the book is about, relating to how that energy from the form of radiation gets changed into what we call internal energy, which relates to temperature, and kinetic energy, which relates to movement, and potential energy, which relates to gravity and the height of the atmosphere or the oceans, or the depth of the ocean for that matter, and latent energy, which is the moisture content of the atmosphere, because when moisture condenses out, it releases the heat that went into it to evaporate that moisture in the first place. And it's all of these different forms of energy and how they get transformed from one to the other that gives rise to the complexity and, from a climate scientist standpoint, the interesting different ways in which this can be manifested in different parts of the world. And so the energy comes in, and then it eventually gets radiated back to space, but it gets radiated back to space at a longer wavelength, at infrared wavelengths. And so we can clearly separate out the incoming from the outgoing radiation, but the difference is the Earth's energy imbalance at the top of the atmosphere. And we can measure that from space to some extent. Now, we have satellites in space that are certainly measuring the components that are doing that, although we have to look at the more complete flow of energy in order to calibrate that fully, because it's very hard from space to get an exact measure, but we can get the relative measures. The changes over time, we can measure very well. And so the energy imbalance is, on a global basis, about 0.9 watts per square meter over the globe, but 0.9 doesn't sound like much. And in fact, the incoming and the outgoing, net incoming and net outgoing, is about 240. So it's, you know, one part in 250 or something like that. It's quite small from that standpoint. So you can't go outside and say, oh, I can feel the global warming. It's just it's just too small. But the trouble is that 0.9 watts per square meter averaged over the planet, the area of the planet is quite large, and so it ends up being about 500 terawatts. That's 500 with 12 zeros after it. And so then you start to think, whoa, that's a lot of energy. And, you know, in my book, I describe some comparisons. You know, the biggest power plants we have are maybe, you know, of order 2,000 megawatts. You know, 500 terawatts, the energy imbalance, is about 500,000 of huge power plants, where we define a huge power plant as say, 100 megawatts. And so we got 500,000 of these things adding energy around the planet every second, every day. You know, for comparison, in 2018, the U.S. electricity consumption was about 0.5 terawatts, 0.5. And so it's, you know, 500 versus 0.5. That's, a factor of 1,000. And, you know, globally, the total energy consumption is estimated to about maybe 3.5 terawatts. And so, you know, it's more than a factor of 100. In terms of the energy imbalance. And so that's why we should sit up and take notice.
Isn't it amazing how the whole Earth system, from the bottom of the sea to the top of the sky, it was like a carefully balanced spinning top or a carefully balanced state, and that was favorable to life as we know it. How far off balance are we now, and how is it possible that such a tiny thing, relatively, as human emissions from fossil fuels, could change the course of where oceans flow and cause ice to crack off and fall into the sea? These very big changes from what seems like a small addition.
Well, this has, of course, happened over time, except it has happened over millennia, over actually hundreds of thousands of years. And this is why we have the big ice ages in the past, things that we call glacials, where there's a lot of ice on the planet, and interglacials, times that have been quite warm and the amount of ice is a lot less. And the changes there are related mainly to the changes in the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. And part of that is a redistribution, and part of it, the easiest way to think of it is that we have seasons. And, you know, in the summer, we get a lot of sunshine, and the North Pole gets a lot of sunshine, for instance, in the summertime. But if we straighten up the tilt of the planet so that it just goes around and around, and it's autumn continuously, then the North Pole never gets any sunshine. And as a result, it cools. That's when it cools off. But if it gets a lot of sunshine in the summertime, then it melts all the ice and gets rid of it. And ice, of course, reflects the sunshine, and so that has a feedback effect. So rather small changes over a long period of time add up. And now what we're doing is changing the climate 100 times faster than anything that's happened in the past, in the geological past. So the numbers may seem quite small, but they are always in the same direction. There's a warming going on, and so they accumulate, and we can see that in multiple ways, and one of the best ways is actually through changes in the ocean.
It's interesting that we know the measurements of parts per million of carbon dioxide. The public and the media have kind of learned that. How many million parts did we reach this year? Richard Alley called CO2 Earth's thermostat. Is there a problem, though, with thinking of just carbon dioxide as a measure of our climate now and in the future?
Well, of course, it's not just carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is important because it has a very long lifetime. The stuff that we put in the atmosphere every day, as we breathe and carry out our various activities, drive cars and generate electricity and so on, some of that gets recycled quite quickly. It gets taken up in photosynthesis by trees. And we can look at that in the various records. One of the best records is at Mauna Loa, at the top of Mauna Loa in Hawaii, where they can measure uncontaminated by local cities the actual concentrations in the atmosphere. And so in the summer, in the spring and in the summer, there is a drawdown of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as the greening of the northern hemisphere takes place. And then in the fall and the winter, as the leaves on the forest floor and twigs and downed trees and so on deteriorate, they put the carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere. And so there's quite a distinctive annual cycle of carbon dioxide, and the problem is that it doesn't get taken out of the system. And so the main way in which carbon dioxide gets taken out of the system is through the weathering of rocks, which is a very slow process, or it gets taken up in the oceans. It gets built into shells and bones of fish, and then when they die, they fall to the ocean floor, and they accumulate there and end up as a form of limestone. And there they are essentially taken out of the system. And so the key thing about carbon dioxide is its very long lifetime, that the stuff we put out there now accumulates, it builds up, although there's a strong annual cycle and even a daily cycle superimposed upon top of that. Other things, water vapor is very important, but water vapor has an average lifetime of only about 9 days before it gets caught up in weather systems. But, the changes in water vapor turn out to be very important in all of this as well.
You mentioned the top of the atmosphere. It's a little bit hard for us to even picture that. It seems like the atmosphere just gets thinner and thinner, and then you're sort of out into space. How do scientists measure things there, and why is that important when we're looking at Earth energy imbalance?
Yes, so we have satellites orbiting the Earth, and there are some big and fairly expensive ones. One of the key ones is a satellite instrument package called Ceres. Clouds and Earth radiation is a key part of this. And so tracking clouds are one of the major complexities of this. And so this has been up there, a series of instruments have been up there since March of 2000. And they're tracking what's coming in from the sun, They're tracking how much is reflected back to space of solar radiation, and then they're tracking how much is radiated back to space from the Earth. And so one of the key ways in which the planet's climate is stabilized is that if it starts to heat up, then it radiates more back to space. In other words, it cools things off. And that's the strongest, what we would call a negative feedback, that's the strongest stabilizer of the Earth's climate. So there can certainly be wiggles before that catches up, but it does tend to catch up. And so the reason the climate keeps changing is because although the Earth's climate is getting hotter and therefore it's radiating more to space, we keep adding even more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. And so climate change continues as a result.
It strikes me, talking with you, Kevin Trenberth, and reading your book, that we need to be teaching how the planet works right in grade 5 or grade 6 in the public system, because we're just beginning to understand how this whole thing works through a lot of work from thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of scientists working over the past couple of decades. Really, it's really heated up. But that's too late now for the people who are going to vote and who are going to set public policy, who may work in government. We need an adult education system for climate change now that we're in the climate crisis.
Well, of course, this is what my book was very much about. It was designed to be readable. There's not very many equations in there, and those that are there are in a sidebar off to the side for those who are a bit more mathematically inclined. And the book is designed to emphasize the physical concepts and detail just what's going on. But I agree with you. Some of the basic concepts of this should be taught at an earlier stage, certainly at high school, and even in universities, at the early stages of the universities. A lot of the content of physics courses, for instance, doesn't adequately deal with our home planet and just what is happening and why. And some of it is certainly quite complex, and you need to get involved in Earth system sciences and so on. But some of it is more basic, and the most basic aspects that need to be understood relate especially to the water cycle and water vapor in the atmosphere, because that's the thing which is giving all of the weather systems this extra boost.
We have been speaking with leading climate scientist Dr. Kevin Trenberth, based on Kevin's new book, The Changing Flow of Energy Through the Climate System. Kevin, thank you for sharing your time with us.
You're most welcome.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.